Before we give Gloria the last word, and Carl will introduce her, the OPO Gallery is opening early. Arts Crawl is today, but they're opening at 2. And it's going to have owls' bowls there. And they're absolutely beautiful, and they're very reasonably priced. And I have drawings there, and Candace has some bone sculpture. And Linda Bowlby has paintings. Okay, the OPO Gallery is right across from Camille's up on 2nd Street. It's about a block and a half. And anybody who'd like to go there on their way home, please do. Now, where's Carl? Okay.
I guess that means Gloria's next.
Gloria's next. That's a large
voice. She has a large voice. I think it'll be easier to listen if you chew at the same time.
Don't chew too loud.
I don't know how long I've known Gloria, but I know that it's super juicy that way. The Nat Foots Food Sovereignty Coalition.
Slaughtered by.
And they're doing really, really important work based on Navajo epistemology and belief. They're not the only ones. I heard Jackie say that food is sacred. Even the food stamp people say food is love. And someone else in the audience says food is sovereign. So with sovereignty
doing good?
Sacredness, I think we'll get along.
Good afternoon again. I just really want to thank all of you for being here today because, you know, I know as farmers, ranchers, gardeners, it's a 24/7 job. And to take time from your schedules to be together like this is wonderful. But it's also an opportunity to learn, to network, and I noticed my new friend here, David, he's been really chattering over here with new information, with new contacts. It's a wonderful opportunity to get acquainted with other people also. I want to go ahead and just maybe talk just a few minutes about maybe why we're into, you know, this business of food. And I love it, though, because I love food. I have to admit, we all have to have food to live anyway. It's a very good connecting activity that all of us can relate to. So today, I want to also thank all the veterans out there for all your work and, fighting for our freedoms and for our land here in America. Because, I know we had a real controversial election that just happened this week, but you know, it's I'm by professional training a high school teacher in history and government, and that's what, you know, brought me into the education world. But in that process, I just found that here out on Navajo land, there's many of our students out there, and even just Navajo people, that don't even understand their rights as citizens, as Navajo citizens. I even have teachers come to me, oh, can I go and vote in my county government, and can I go vote for national government, and just because I voted the chapter, does that exclude me, you know? So a lot of questions out there about you know, government and history and our citizen responsibility. And I am just so happy. I also teach Navajo government. And I have always been an advocate for Navajo history and language. And I know my latest job, full-time paying job, was with Gallup School District, and I was the Indian Education Director. And I worked with many Navajo culture and bilingual teachers. And we are very concerned about the returning and the restoration and revitalization of our culture and language. And I stumbled onto this kind of a food sovereignty project from a long kind of a journey. And I'm wearing this scarf today as a remembrance from my father. He bought it for me when we were on the island of Corsica, off the coast of France. And what we did was, I belonged to an American Indian Exchange in Washington, D.C., and we took 9 tribal dance troops to France. And we did parades and stage performances and dances. It was a wonderful whole month, and I took my father with me. And I was so surprised, the city mayor in Martique gave my father the keys to the city. And I was so surprised because what I learned was that my father in World War II was in this small town of Martique. And it was his, you know, group and the army and those folks that pushed, you know, the Germans, you know, out of France. And so the two gentlemen hugged each other and they were crying, and it was a real sentimental, you know, get together after like 40 years. My dad said, "This is such a joyous occasion to be here in this country and in this town." I think it was almost 50 years, because my father would have been 100 years old this past April. So it was a very touching, you know, story to see my father get to go somewhere where he fought diligently, you know, as a warrior. And what took me back too was the city mayor said, "You know what, Mr. Begay didn't even have to be in this city, or this town, or this country 50 years ago. It's wonderful that American Indian came over here to fight, not only for America, but, you know, for other people in the world." So that was really a wonderful little story. The other little story that I have to say about my father is that when I lived in Washington, D.C. for 10 years, I used to come back here to Navajo. And I became an advocate for the Navajo resistors up on the Hopi partition land. So I slept in the hogans and in the sheep camps with the Navajo resistors up on this Hopi partition land. And I used to rent a van and take them into federal court in Phoenix. And we'd have to fight against what was called the accommodation agreement with the Hopi tribe and the federal government. Because what happened with that was that the Navajos up there, they were kind of like illegally residing then on this Hopi Navajo partition land. And these resistors refused to move. And so we had to go to federal court and try to negotiate that these Navajos would get to retain, you know, some of their rights as Navajos. And at that time, they were not allowed to fix up their houses, not allowed to garden. They were not allowed to bury their dead, and all of these atrocities. And it was so sad to see that. So anyway, one summer I came back, and we were ready to go to Big Mountain for a Sioux Sundance. And I went to pick up my dad here in Gallup. He was living with his sister, and I couldn't find him one Sunday night. And so I finally found a cousin here, and I said, "What happened to my dad? Where is he? We're supposed to be, you know, on our way to Big Mountain." And she says, "Gloria, he's in the hospital." And so I said, "Oh, my gosh." So I finally found him at the hospital late that night and met with his doctor. And the doctor said, "You know what? Your father's, he had a heart attack. We test him. He's become diabetic. His kidneys are failing. His liver is failing." And they said, "I'm sorry to tell you, you know, he is terminally ill, and he has 3 months to live." And so I called back east to my funder, and I says, "I have to cancel my contract, and I have to take care of my father." So I had to tell my husband back east in Washington, D.C., "You'll have to take care of the 2 girls. I have to take care of my father." So I took time out, 3 months, and took care of him. He went in and out of hospitals, 4 hospitals and 2 elder homes. They'd even fly him into Phoenix. And the last stop he made was the Veterans Hospital in September. And at that hospital, my dad grabbed my hand And he said, Gloria, this is no way for an elder to live in a dignified way. No way. He says, you have already been, you've taken time away from your family, your job, and you've learned how to do special meals for me, change my diaper, take me to a dialysis center 3 times a week. And he goes, no, this is no way. I want to go home to Pinedale. So he says, you tell the doctor, I want to go home today. So I went down, told the doctor, and he goes, you give him anything he wants. And so they pulled up the ambulance in front of the hospital. I followed him in my car to Theroux, New Mexico. And that's where they put him in my car. My daughters met me there with his oxygen tank. And my dad said, take me in the back roads through Mariano Lake and Smith Lake and, you know, that back road. He showed me, he told me the story, his last story. I used to hunt wild boar out here at the base of Mount Taylor. And he says, and a lot of us Navajos harvest a type of a soybean out here. And he says, and I herded sheep here with my grandmother, herded, you know, he had a number of horses. He was a great horseman. And so finally I got him to his home in Pinedale. And I and my daughter took him into his new trailer house. We had to fight tooth and nail to get water for him and everything. And the sad part, you know, he was fighting 20 years to get a silly home site lease and to get his housing with the veterans program. He never got any of that. So, you know, as a daughter, I went ahead and helped him push to get at least his home site lease before he passed away. But that, anyway, my daughter and I lifted him out of the car, put him in his bed, and he passed away. And it was at that point I said, you know what, I've got to, you know, really look at what's going on with our people. And being an educator, I was also doing work with schools in diabetes prevention. And so I went out to almost 100 Indian schools in the Four Corner States here doing that work. And to hear the stories from the children about how they were hungry and how they were eating their pop and potato chips and the alcoholism and the domestic violence abuse going on. And I says, you know what? I says, I've been away from here for 10 years, and to hear these stories, to me, there was a big regression going on. And then I started looking at test scores of these children in the Navajo schools. And sure enough, 5 years in a row, only 12% of our schools were meeting state exams. And I says, there's something more to this picture. Because at least with the No Child Left Behind, they demanded school facilities be good, highly qualified teachers, but yet our children are not performing. And so I said, maybe it's some of the health issues facing our children. And you know, if you're hungry, you can't really think well, and you can't learn well. So that's when I changed my whole kind of like career and journey back into health issues. So I and my friend Noreen Kelly, is she here still? Her and I were on the team that passed the Navajo junk food tax. And it just finally got finished with the last set of guidelines a couple months ago. All the chapters now have access to the tax revenues. $1.4 million was raised this past year, which is great. So we're out now campaigning with the chapters, get those wellness projects going, get your community gardens or your home gardens or health education in the chapter, or clean up trash or, or, you know, all the waste management that is lacking on the Navajo. And so anyway, we're ready to do that work because we worked with Indian Health Service for the last 5 years. And now we're trained facilitators and trainers. And we can go out and help chapters, you know, do that kind of work from here on out. So we're very, very grateful that that legislation passed. And it was a hard work because these delegates, you know, would not believe us until finally the Heart Association gave us a chunk of money and we hired a Navajo economist. And they did an economic impact study for us. Finally, when we would, our slogan was, it's not about the money, it's about the message. But with the council, it was about the money. And they said, why are you trying to tax the poor people here? You know, there's no jobs here. You know, there's all these economic issues. And I said, well, you know, we have a set determination that we want to improve the health and well-being of the tribe. And then when we even heard that the tribal workers were not getting to work on time, they were not doing their work, they were at the doctor appointments, and also missing work and sleeping on the job sometime, and their health program had to be increased. And that's when our delegate, our champion delegate, Danny Simpson said, nope, you know, this is about the money. And then when we showed retrocession of resequestration is the word. I had to think, rethink of that word, of the cutbacks of federal dollars to Indian Health Service. And we can't no longer be taking bags of prescriptions and running to doctor appointments. You know, the tribe finally realized, you know, we just can't go down this path of the health issues. You know, there are two tribes in Arizona that are already at a 90% diabetes rate. Here on Navajo, they're saying by 2020, we could be at that rate. So we have to step it up, you know. Out here on Navajo. It's really kind of scary. And then so while we were kind of waiting for the legislation and all this other stuff to happen, Noreen and I said, well, when we were at the chapter meetings and even the delegates gave us recommendations, they said, let's look at the food issues. Let's get some community gardens going. And the chapter people said, and also get those kids back into farming and ranching careers. Let's get that back on track. When we started studying the issues of food systems and food sovereignty on Navajo, then we also realized that I heard a term, and I don't know, maybe June can correct me or not, but we testified at the State of New Mexico Senate on Indian Affairs a few months ago. And somebody told us that 70% of our Navajo farms and ranches are in idle. Uh-huh. But because you know what? The bigger issue in this whole food system restoration effort is that we were able to be a good partner with COPE and with other organizations and let them know, unless we have good water and good soil, good land, we're not going to be able to produce good food. And when we get good food, then we have good minds, bodies, and spirits. And that's what our Food Sovereignty Alliance is about. It's a definition of food for your mind, body, spirit, and emotions. And like somebody was saying here, it's sacred. And so what we're going to do with our food sovereignty, we were all working very hard and training with one of our local medicine people about the blessing way ceremony and how all of our work in our ceremonies and our prayers and songs talk about how you keep a good life. And it is through the, actually like Blue House says, you know, it's rules and regulations that actually come out of our ceremonial songs and prayers and ceremonies and our reenactment of the origins of our immersion and the sacredness of how we take care of the soil, how we sing to the soil, how we sing to the plants, and all of those positive vibrations and energy of Mother Earth is there. And so in my training with students, I use this image. Oh, it's not there anymore. Anyway, I use this image that was developed by one of our Navajo medicine people for a Navajo NASA astronomy book. And that image was showing a man standing there with a cornstalk inside his middle body and his arms stretched out with spirals. And it shows the four sacred mountains around him. It shows the Father Sun and the Grandfather Moon and the eagle feathers. And it just has a lot of cultural lessons in the image. And children as far as third grade is where I use this image. I use it at men's conference. I use it at women's conference. Everybody gets it, Indian and non-Indian, because we're all in this together. We're all interconnected with everything. And in tribal Navajo law, it does say in our Title I, Chapter 2, and this is what our medicine man's been training us on, and I teach in Navajo government lessons, is that by tribal law, we are the stewards of the land and the environment. We are the caretakers, all of us, whether you're black, blue, brown, or yellow. And the Navajo word Diné means earth surface people. So that's all of us. And we all have to be concerned and work together if things happen in our universe. So if you look at the picture, and I have the kids analyze this, and they go around, I go around the room and I say, what lesson do you see in there? What do you learn from this this picture? And you'll see the man in the middle, or it could be a woman too, and you'll see the spirals. What do you think the spirals mean?
Wind.
What else?
Cycling.
The cycle of life. Cycle of life. Pollen. The spreading of seeds.
The roots.
What?
The roots. Grassroots people.
Grassroots people being the corn and man. Yeah. It's the
infinity.
Infinity. Everything going in a circle and always evolving, circling and existing. Infinity. And it also means all the beautiful unseen energies in the universe. Sound and light and vibrations. And that's why music is so beautiful. It actually moves the vibrations in our atmosphere, makes us feel good. Poems, songs, stories, prayers, all of these are wonderful, positive energies in our universe. And all the natural forces, as maybe the wind, the sunlight, the rainbows, all of these energies are there for us. Okay, the sacred mountains. What do you think that means for us Navajos? Or for any body of people that live in a certain space and time?
Tied to the land.
Yes, tied to the land, to the Father Sky. You know, that's what we learn in our Navajo stories, is that everything is connected. The Father Sky, the Mother Earth, the two can't live without each other. You know, we know the rain clouds and the rains, and everything has to work together. Nothing can grow without the sunlight, and nothing can grow without the water coming from the clouds into the earth. All of that. So the main story of this picture is interconnection. Okay. Now, what happens, though, if there's a break in that connection? Give me some examples. What if there's a crack or a break?
Earthquake.
Earthquakes. Mm-hmm.
Total collapse.
Disruption of the system.
Yeah, disruption of the system. And what about us people?
Gaps in knowledge, forgotten traditions.
Yeah, uh-huh. And that's what's kind of going on here. When, if you read our little article in the, you know, that journal, if we have to also reteach the children the history. We have to teach them that, you know, we're just not here to go to the store and buy food and bring it back anymore. How did it grow? And our kids have to relearn all of that, because a lot of them now are just sitting in the homes and being little couch potatoes and doing their little atendos, you know. It's global. It's a worldwide thing going on here.
Uh-huh. More than just the kids, young adults. More than just the children. Older generations as well.
It's all of society. Mm-hmm. Yep, it's all of society being affected by that whole technology, laptops, cell phones, Tendo games, and all of that. And so it's kind of like interfering now with our knowledge and our
view of the world, the sacredness of everything in the universe. Other cracks for us, like us human beings, is when we get sick, when we get diabetes. All of those are cracks in our universe. And so whose responsibility is it to take care of this universe? It's ours. It's ours. And I know this morning we were talking a little bit about, you know, issues with bad soil, you know, and we got to do this and do that. It's really even deeper than that in terms of, you know, ourselves within our spirits and our emotions. What motivates us to keep farming and gardening? And so this is why I just love all of you, because, you know, you understand the growing cycle and how you have to take care of things and nurture things and have them grow. And then that helps us human beings be healthier. And so we are all for, you know, organic. And some of the visions that our DFSA wants to also look at is, you know, doing a traditional style, what do they call it, food hub. You know, why can't we be feeding our Head Start and our senior centers and doing a kitchen at the chapter house or feeding our local schools? You know what, on Navajo. I serve on a special consultant project with the Navajo Department of Education. We have 177 schools on Navajo. And I was talking with some procurement people about the food, the lunches and the breakfasts. Millions and millions of dollars, folks. I mean, if we wanted to, as food growers and ranchers, impact your economies and your local budgets, we should be feeding our, even just the local schools, especially if you're on Navajo. Mm-hmm. They import all of this Cisco pre-made stuff, you know, pre-frozen, full of chemicals, you know, preservatives, artificial colors and flavors. You know, it's just, no wonder our people are unhealthy out on Navajo. And nobody said this morning, CDC buddied up with Navajo government a couple years ago, and they did this store study. 80 to 90% of the stores have just junk food.
Yeah.
Junk food. I mean, no, hardly any fruits and vegetables, folks. So we're in a real crisis state, because we all know there's no nutritional value out of pop and potato chips. And so our kids are lacking the nutrients, the minerals, all of those wonderful things from fresh fruits and vegetables. And we were a plant-based diet people, you know, 50 years ago. There was only one case of a diabetes that happened in Ganado 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. No, in 1952. And now what's happened? Our whole kind of like world, now we have cars and trucks and we're not being, you know, we're sitting in the homes now. And when I do my diabetes presentation, I'll say, why is this happening? Oh, it's NHA. That Navajo Housing Authority. They just make those Navajos sit in those little houses. They're not allowed to make gardens. They're not allowed to go out and freely play. Now they're becoming crime ridden.
Yeah.
And then this leads me to another topic area of substance abuse, drinking, overweight. You know what? Those are all band-aids over deeper health issues. So not only is the deeper issues of land and water issues, but it's also, we're putting band-aids on deeper problems that all of us face sometimes in our lives as stress, worry. And when I go out and I'm meeting even with other tribes on this topic, you know, American Indians have the highest rate of diabetes and obesity because we worry. We worry about no jobs. You know, some communities, 90% unemployment, poverty, you know, dirt roads, no running water, hauling water, getting your wood, those kinds of extra stress indicators. And so we are so stressed out. I know there's one Indian medical doctor that says, you know what, I blame diabetes totally on stress and worry, mm-hmm. because that's the thing that's really, you know, doing havoc to our body systems. And this is why our DFSA organization wants to look at the deeper emotional and spiritual restoration of our people and tie it in with the land, tie it in with our culture and our language, and we can restore that. Somebody had two words up there this morning that said cultural restoration, and it is true. We are going to have to go back and restore deeper cultures to make ourselves better and cure and heal ourselves as a Navajo Nation. And then all people, this is affecting all Americans now. I mean, if you have to watch TV and you see all the diabetes commercials on equipment and all of that, you know it's a problem. So this, to me, the key, one of the first key indicators is look at the food system. And so we have a big issue with our Navajo food system out on Navajo. We have problems with production. We have problems with distribution, you know, as local farmers and growers, you know, because we just, as traditional growers, it was just make enough for our family and maybe, you know, our maybe immediate clan members, our aunties, maybe our uncles and that kind of thing. But now we are asked to stretch it and make extra to go make a little bit of money at the farmer markets or maybe go sell it to the Head Start. But so what? We need to restore all the better foods on the Navajo Nation and everywhere, actually. We are so caught up in America's food industry. It's pretty scary because we know they have a handle on the lobbyists in Washington. I worked there 10 years and I was seeing it and I was just, you know, heart-sickened. Even USDA, you know, big subsidized farms and that kind of thing. So we're kind of got a lot of challenges, but we're smart, we're intelligent. Already you folks here have the key to, you know, solving a lot of these bigger issues. But we all have to be working together and communicating. And this is why we set up the Alliance, because we see it as a very complex, endeavor when we're sitting there talking about restoration of culture, restoration of food systems. Okay, so I just want to just thank all of you for all of your work and coming here today and sharing your stories and sharing your knowledge, because that's what it's going to take, all of us working together as partners and helping each other out, no matter where we are or who we are. So anyway, that's just my small message today. And just let you know, when we talk about food sovereignty, it is true, like Florence said, we have no control then on our Navajo Nation if we don't control our food. And historically, you know, when we were in prison at Fort Sumner, they took away all of our traditional foods. We were introduced to the first onslaught of prison, what we call prison food. Then when they started up all the boarding schools, then all these imported lunches and dinners and foods, another onslaught of foreign foods in our Navajo food system. So historically, you know, we've seen all these things happening, and our children have to learn about it then, and they have a better understanding of why they need to become part of the solution. And so we're going to be setting up a new curriculum this coming year, and we want to thank COPE for giving us a sub award contract to do some of this curriculum building, and we want to get out to the schools and we want to start teaching the kids. When we talk about food, it's food for the mind, body, spirits, and emotions. And we're going to be teaching about some of these ceremonies, these beautiful songs and these beautiful prayers, and how all of our lifestyles are aligned with growing plants and animals and the beauty of restoring the earth. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Did you say questions?
Do you have any information on the new dialysis center that's been set up, or that new building in Sabinito?
In Sabinito. I don't have any information. All I know is that Senator Udall told me, Gloria, will you please try to help get the Navajos well, because we're running out of federal money for any more dialysis centers.
Yeah, because that's the renal centers. isn't it?
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Oh my gosh, this is, why are we setting these up? It tells me that we're not even
Right. If you go over to the elders care by the hospital, the Indian hospital, I went to see my aunt there last year. The whole room, as big as this, all of them in wheelchairs because they're amputees. And then I went back into the kitchen where they were eating lunch, more of them in wheelchairs as amputees. And those are offsets of what happens in the diabetes issue. And that's really sad. There's no documentation yet of how many really Navajos are amputees because of the diabetes and those other issues. Wow. Even the business of the dialysis centers, we couldn't even get solid numbers. And then the other set of numbers is cancer victims. Cancer victims on Navajo don't have to disclose that they are even having cancer. And so those numbers are, you know, very questionable. And the four biggest killers of Navajo are what?
Diabetes, alcoholism,
obesity.
Number one, accidental deaths. Number two, cancer. Number three, diabetes. And what was the fourth one?
Well, it's got to be renal. Or, I mean, because kidneys and high blood pressure are related. So it could be heart disease, but it's still food.
Yeah, there's
water.
Yeah, heart attacks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And folks, you know what? What's those four have all in common?
Health, food.
They can all be prevented.
Another thing, Lord, it's been like, 30 years? Because at that time, I was, I started working that was going on. First, I worked in the dialysis center. There were no dialysis units on the reservation.
No, I understand. That was the one.
The nurses, I remember saying that looking at the diagnosis, a lot of these were lifestyle, diabetes with lifestyle, and also glomerulonephritis, which is preventable. Mm-hmm. But those were the diagnosis. And then you have the diabetes mellitus, which is hereditary. So we're kind of teaching.
Yeah, it's almost like what we found is it's almost a family lifestyle. You know, I have a daughter-in-law. Her mother just was diagnosed and now being treated for thyroid cancer. And her daughter had cancer, too. And so what happens is that we have in our families a culture of certain eating habits, maybe, you know, not doing any physical activities and stuff. So as growers, you all know you have to get out there and physically do work. And that's why we're healthy. You know, we just pay attention to what we're eating and our lifestyles and being, you know, physically active. So those are really good, you know, lifestyle things that we should be doing.
Yeah, so I guess we're still, you know, it's still happening.
Yes, yes, and get this, let me tell you, when we did the junk food tax resolutions to the council, we had to come up with all the evidence, all the research data, and we had to put it in resolution form with all the citations of, you know, where we got the documents and the, you know, the bibliography and everything. And we learned that Indian Health Service and also Navajo Special Diabetes, they were getting $10 million apiece for the past 10 years. Do the math. And it's still, the trends are still escalating. So whatever they're doing is not really working, folks.
Yeah. Is all of that money getting spent annually?
Yes. Yep. Uh-huh. And
with no positive end result.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, something's wrong with that picture, and we presented that to the Navajo Council, and that's why they are concerned too. You know, what's going on here? We're not finding the solutions.
So,
there's another question, a follow-up, Gloria. Go ahead, Ms. Denison.
The diabetes project on Navajo received a lot of money because I go to the city, And we have Tuba City, what we call a 638 hospital. Mm-hmm. And it's contracted out to the tribe or to a set up nonprofits or corporate anyway, the government contracts that out to the tribe. But they have this big building, three levels. It's a nice building. And I was asking them, I said, have you worked under that, working with that from the bureau in years ago, too? I said, how did you get this building? There's no way the C38 does buildings.
Mm-hmm. There's
program, and then they said, the doctor whispered to me, and he said, you use the diabetes
medicine. Oh, yeah.
Diabetes was getting quite a bit of money. How much of that is going to the programs?
Mm-hmm. There are also special appropriations that the tribes can go to the Congress and ask for, like a new school facility or a new hospital facility. So that would be added.
I know for the hospital. But the other concern that I am interested in is knowing, coming back, going back to a lot of my concern is just what I observed or growing up with. I think for the schools, I tell my children that when you're a baby, when your cord comes off, the mother buries it. And I tell your children where their cords are buried. I think that's a teaching because some of them could be in, it can be in a farm plot, in a garden plot. Another could be in the sheep corral. And I said there, I was telling my brother who lives in Minnesota, I said, when are you coming home? I said, I know where your umbilical cord is, because I follow my mom and when she buried yours. I know where it is. Mm-hmm. And the teaching was that this child would carry on the
right.
Teachings like that. I think we've forgotten that. I don't know how much we're teaching that or what we're doing with our babies' umbilical cords. And then we have the songs, too.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see somehow to bring those back. We have the songs for when we collect pollen. There's a song that women collect that. We have birthing song.
Yes.
I remember planning with my mom, she would bring the little kids in. They're the ones that put the seed in.
Yes.
And with the thought saying, they have special powers, the yogi not sick. And so, we get the kids out there to put the seeds in. So there's songs with that too.
Right.
So anyway, I would like to see if we can find more information or who has that anymore.
That's what our Food Sovereignty Alliance in our year three program, we're going to be working with the medicine men and women and bringing back and researching all of those songs and prayers and things like that.
And putting because, it in the curriculum.
Yes, and we're putting it in a curriculum, but in 4 months, we have a time frame that by the end of February, we want the curriculum done and we want to pilot in 4 schools this springtime. And then we can take it to the larger communities.
The Getty Museum has recordings in the 20s that has all the songs.
Some people have it.
So,
but you can get it.
And the Getty Museum is in
California.
California.
And you can pull up, because we pulled up the Papago, we pulled up the Tohono O'odham on them. When I worked with the diabetes programs over there, we pulled up all the songs and stuff. And we found songs that people didn't know.
Right, right.
So it's an awesome resource to go
oh,
to.
Oh, yes. Okay, good to know.
Oh, the yeah. other one is the rug, because my mom said that. It's a, what happened? When we were young and we were weaving, the woman in the family said we were all singing.
Yeah.
And I said, where are those songs now?
Yeah, we have horse songs and sheep herding songs
every
and
activity.
We have songs for everything, actually. And we just have lost that tradition, and we got to bring it back, because that will bring back the beautiful vibrations in back into our mm-hmm. universe. And one last comment on the four sacred mountains. Some people will, you know, it's in our prayers and everything. And I just want to say, you know what? Those mountains were actually physical boundaries that taught us Navajos, this is your home area. You focus on this land, this terrain, how it operates. What are the plants here? What's the rain patterns and everything? You focus on this land here. And it also, on a personal level, taught us that we have our personal limits too. And we have our personal boundaries as individuals and peoples. And so we should be teaching this also to our children. Our children are so way out there floating, I believe, you know. And yeah. this is why we want to restore some of this really more ancient knowledge.
Can I add a note to that?
Okay.
In 2 years, the Navajo Nation will be celebrating 150 years since the Treaty of 1868. Mm-hmm. And I used to work for the Navajo Nation, they put me on the Water Commission, and out to the city, we're giving presentations. They're supposed to educate the Navajo water rights, and they asked me to talk about Navajo sovereignty. So what I did, I recall what Chief Barton Sito said when he was across the table from General Sherman, and he's talking about the four sacred mountains and food, and kind of to paraphrase what he said. He said, you know, we came to this country, and I was a proponent for coming out here. I thought we could start a new life, and this is the Bosque Redondo, mm-hmm. out there along the Pecos River. And he said, I was wrong. And our homeland is bounded by four sacred mountains and four rivers. And that's where we were told that's where we're supposed to thrive. Mm-hmm. And we violated that. Mm-hmm. So you have to send us home. And here we tried to make things work. Mm-hmm. We planted the first year. It was the rains came and just wiped out our crops. And then we did it again. Then it was the grasshoppers. Then the third year was something else.
Yep.
So, fourth year we didn't even plant. We're ready to go home. We're going to be out of here. So that's what he said. So, I heard you were coming, and I may stitch my own moccasins so I can go back and wait for you. Does that help my friends? Sufficient out there, so that's what he was talking about, food sovereignty, what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Right. I know we're also involved, some of our partners are working like with the Navajo water team, looking at the issues of the Utah water settlements coming down the pipe now, Little Colorado River, you know, we haven't even looked at the Utah side here, but you know, these, unless we resolve some of these deeper issues, we're really not going to get to the business of growing our food for ourselves adequately. Yeah.
So this has been fun. It doesn't have to end. Let's congratulate Gloria and Billy. I want you to cross the room and reach across the table, find ways to keep this conversation going in small groups. And also be sure and tell Bea and her her board at Work in Beauty what kind of conversation we need to have next time. So talk among each other, continue to make connections and strengthen relationships and focus on the important issues of our time, of our region, of our shared experience. Okay?
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.